Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, the former NBA video coordinator, having spent time with the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, and the New York Knicks. And I'm joined alongside Bruce Bernstein, our four-time Emmy Award winner who spent more than three decades at ESPN producing NBA shows, SportsCenter, and soaking up knowledge from the best hoop analysts in the business. We're also joined by two-time NBA Award winner Michael Worldby Freer, who is a senior writer at Stat Factor, specializing in writing advanced statistical NBA reports for various announcers across the league. And tonight, we're also joined by Jared Greenberg of NBA TV and NBA on TNT. And this is episode number 93, the Ron Artest episode, as Artest wore number 93 for three seasons as a member of the Sacramento Kings. Before Bruce introduces tonight's guest, we get into some fun discussions. Just a quick reminder that BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And tonight, Bruce, I'll let you start us off with introducing tonight's guest.
We are super excited to welcome back one of our favorite basketball brains. He's Jared Greenberg of TNT Sports and NBA TV. Jared is the host of NBA Crunch Time on the NBA app, but more on that in a moment. Jared, this is your third or fourth appearance on 48 wow. Minutes, and we all get a little bit smarter when you join us. So thanks very much for being here.
Wow. Usually people say they get dumber when they're around me. So this is a treat. Hey, you know, it's the Meta World Peace episode, but I'm curious. You know, there's one other person in NBA history who wore number 93.
I think it's P.J. Brown of the Boston Celtics.
There you go. You got to give P.J. Brown some love. I mean, I was one of about 17 people rooting on P.J. Brown back when he was playing for the Nets in the mid-90s. So, you know, I got to give a shout-out to those guys. Got to give them some love.
All right, so Jared. Yes, Jared, for those who haven't seen the show, tell us all we need to know about the NBA app and your Crunch Time show.
Well, listen, I think it is the best way to consume the NBA these days. We do it once or twice a week on the busiest nights of the week when there's at least 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 9 games going on simultaneously. And it's essentially the only whip around show in the NBA. So we're going to take you to the biggest moments of the night as they happen live. You don't have to flip around League Pass. You don't have to flip around your cable looking for the games. We'll put up 1, 2, 3, sometimes 4 games at a time. And if we missed it live, which is very rare, we'll immediately show the play or the moment to you that will keep your finger on the pulse of the entire night in the NBA. We're essentially we're your social media feed for the NBA. We're doing the scrolling for you, and we're keeping up the pace. And there's so many different reasons why people would want to watch. Obviously, if you just love the NBA and want more than one game at a time, that's you, Bruce. If you're somebody who just is looking for snapshots of the big moments as they're happening and don't have the attention span to watch a full game, that's us. If you have multiple favorite players on different teams, that's NBA Crunch Time on the app. And there's also the gambling aspect of it as well. We're not going to shove it down your throat, but we know there's a lot of people these days who are invested in the night-in, night-out gambling of the NBA. So we're going to keep tracks of the lines, of the over-unders, and everything you need to know about that night in the NBA. And here's the best part. It's totally free to watch as long as you have the NBA app, and it's commercial-free. So it truly is the best way to consume the NBA when we're on the NBA app. NBA Crunch Time, I hope you'll be there for us.
So Jared, if you're getting it on your phone, you can also then cast it onto your smart TV, right? So you can put it right up on your big screen.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bruce. A lot of people, you know, and that's other ways people watch. You know, we can be the perfect second screen complement. If you're watching a game or maybe somebody you live with wants to watch The Bachelor on the big TV and you just want to have us on your phone, you could do that or your tablet. But like you said, Bruce, you can also use us as your main screen by casting us onto your main TV.
Very cool stuff there, Jared. Looking forward to checking you out on Crunch Time. Now, let's get things started off on tonight's podcast, taking a look at the Western Front. And we'll start off with the Golden State Warriors. They are currently clinging on to a play-in spot in the Western Conference playoff standings. But they've got Chris Paul back. Steph Curry looks like he might be rejoining the team here on Friday in their matchup against the Lakers. And if they are able to put a healthy team together, do you think they can make some buzz with a playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, listen, they first got to get themselves out of the position they're in. You know, it's one thing to be in the play-in. It's another to be in the 9-10 game where you have to win twice, right? That's, to me, the bigger issue for these guys. And yes, I do think whoever comes out, whether it's the Lakers or the Warriors, they're going to give a potential first-round opponent trouble just because of the experience factor and the talent factor too, right? Like, they're most likely, or there's a really good chance at this point of with a month to go, that they're going to be taking on an up-and-coming young team in that first round. So, yeah, I do think that they could pose a real threat. But again, those four teams that are in that scenario right now, 6 through 10, Dallas, Phoenix, the Lakers, and the Warriors. And I'm going to throw Sacramento in there as a fifth team because I just don't love what I'm seeing out of them lately, even though they've come up with a nice win the other night against the Lakers. I just don't think any one of them are consistent enough to say that you can count on anything with any of those teams.
All right, so I want to ask you a quick question about something that we saw on Wednesday night out of Chris Paul. So he was teed up by official Matt Myers, uh-huh. And then he proceeded to tee Myers up. Now, to me, that almost seemed like it should have been an ejection there. But because Steph Curry wasn't available, do you think that maybe factored into Myers in not tossing him? Or do you just think he didn't feel it was that egregious?
Yeah, it's funny. I think sometimes the guys who talk the most and the guys who often get the most technical fouls actually get more of a runway than those who don't talk at all. I think we see it a lot with Draymond Green. I think we see it every single possession with Luka Doncic. It's getting a bit annoying with him. But I think kudos to Matt Myers, who teed him up when he should have teed him up. And like you said, Bruce, easily could have given him a second tech. It was funny. It was in the moment, but there was maturity. There was Matt Myers, who's a younger referee, could have easily pulled the trigger. And I think people would have said, oh, he's trying to be the star of the show and all that. And I think the referees, we got to recognize these referees, as much as we've talked for years about acknowledging that professional athletes are humans too, we got to acknowledge that referees are human beings as well. And they're hearing all the noise and chatter about people saying that the refs are too inexperienced, they're making bad calls, they're impacting the game too frequently. And good job by Matt Myers of keeping his composure, even though Chris Paul absolutely tried to show him up.
Hey, Jared, you mentioned the Kings a few minutes ago. I want to get back to them real quick here because you're absolutely right. They're about as inconsistent as you can get because, you know, in the last month, they've beaten the Nuggets, they've beaten the Clippers, they've beaten the T-Wolves, they've beaten the Bucks, the Lakers twice, but then they lose to the Bulls, then they lose to the Rockets. So it's like, I'm curious, where is, in your opinion, where's their ceiling in the Western Conference? How high do you think they can really get this during the playoffs?
I caught a lot of flack in the preseason when I said that the Kings were going to take a massive nosedive in the Western Conference standings. People said, what are you talking about? Young core, would they finish second in the West last year? Second or third, I don't remember where, but their ceiling is up. Their direction that they're going to go, they're trending in the right direction. The hardest place to improve in the NBA is not bad to good. The hardest place to improve is good to great. And this team is experiencing that on a night in, night out basis. And as much as we talk about how there's a lack of defense in the NBA, which is true, but I think teams have learned a lot about what makes Sacramento tick, and they've learned how to contain that. And then in addition to teams that have to go from good to great, a lot of those teams, like we saw with Atlanta a few years ago, a lot of it is either circumstantial about why they went from bad to good, because of the other teams around them. And it's also guys having career years. So now to go from bad to good and then good to great, guys who had good year, had career years in that good year, they have to then be better than their best ever career year to become great. And that's really hard to do while all these other teams around you are improving. And so to answer your question, I think their ceiling is I think they're I don't see them winning a first round series. I don't see them winning a playoff series.
And the follow up on the King, or additional question on the Kings here, as far as Sabonis goes, the run he's been on, where would you place him in the MVP ladder at this stage?
So tough. I think that there are seven, maybe eight legit MVP candidates right now. I think Sabonis is unfortunately a product of putting up great numbers that aren't being seen league-wide or nationally or internationally because it hasn't resulted in wins enough. And I think we take the whole triple-double and now the double-double thing for granted a little bit because it's not a 1+1=2 anymore where, you know, you get a triple-double, you're supposed to impact winning, right? You're supposed to win games, and that's just not happening. I think – and what's unfortunate is – the way I like to look at MVP, because it's the way you're supposed to look at MVP, is in a vacuum of just this season. And you're not supposed to be influenced by what the player has done in his past or what the expectation for the player is. It's just what he's doing now. But unfortunately, I think Sabonis is taking a hit by some of the national media or just the national narrative because people expected Sacramento to be better. If he was putting up these numbers and Sacramento's the top four team, yeah, he's absolutely going to be in the MVP conversation. What stunned me, I thought he was the biggest Western Conference All-Star snub. I was stunned that he was not an injury replacement on the All-Star team. And I think that maybe speaks volumes. The coaches around the league did not feel like he was deserving of a reserve spot on the All-Star team.
Now, Jared, you talk about the difficulty from going good to great in the NBA, and I certainly couldn't agree more with that. I see that happening with the Phoenix Suns this year. Of course, injuries have played a huge factor in maybe their difficulty to get to the greatness that a lot of people projected at the beginning of the season. But if they are healthy, of course, tonight they're losing in Boston. They have their three stars back in the lineup for tonight's matchup. But do you see them being a threat to be the West if Beal, KD, and Booker can mesh over this last month of the season?
Sure. Ross, like, yeah, theoretically, yeah, they should win an NBA championship. But I just, there's this wild thing that happens this time of the year, every single NBA season, for at least as long as I've been covering it. It's my 13th season at TNT Sports, where people start to say, well, yeah, the team's been hurt all year. Of course they're going to be healthy in the playoffs. It's like teams and players cross over this magical threshold where once we begin the playoffs, all of this injury stuff is not going to matter anymore. There's absolutely no pieces of evidence to make me believe that every single postseason game that the Suns play, whether it be in a play-in or in an actual playoff series, that they're going to have all three of those guys for every single game. It's not bad luck. It's who these guys have been. It's who they are. And it's not taking a shot at any one of these guys. I don't think that they're sitting out on purpose. I don't think they're being soft, but certain individuals have a tendency to get injured, and that leads to them missing games, and that leads to teams not winning championships.
All right, so moving slightly up one spot in the standings from Phoenix, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the Pelicans. They score more points per game than Denver and Minnesota. They allow fewer points per game than OKC, Phoenix, and the Clippers. Right now they're fifth. They're a rugged defensive team. Opponents shoot only 46%, fifth best in the league. And they're an excellent road team, 21-13. So is NBA Nation sleeping on this team? I mean, are they a threat to really do damage in the postseason, in your opinion?
I think they possibly could be the sleeper of the Western Conference playoffs, particularly with all the injuries that are happening above them and below them in the Western Conference standings right now. But Bruce, I mean, I think you know this as well as anybody when you're trying to come up with content for shows and stuff. Like, we've gotten tired of waiting for Zion and the Pelicans. And maybe that's a bit unfair because of how young they still are. But I'll tell you this, like, when teams say after a run or after a season, we were disrespected, nobody believed in us, it's because of your history. It's not that we said, man, you've been really good for a long time, and we just don't think you're going to do it this year. Right? Like, eventually, you've just got to shut up and do it. And I've got to see him do it. And the other thing, too, is, like, there's too many nights with this team, and I truly believe 1 through 15 or 17, however you want to categorize rosters these days, I think the Pelicans are the most talented team in the NBA. From first player to last player, I think they absolutely are. Like, they have a guy on their bench in Jordan Hawkins who, if he was on any other team in the NBA, he would be getting 8th or 9th man minutes. You know, he'd be getting 15 to 18 minutes a game because he would be one of the most efficient shooters in the game, one of the best three-point shooters. He can't crack the lineup for Willie Green because of how deep they are. I think that's going to be a problem in the playoffs, right? Because Willie Green's going to have to condense that lineup. Some guys are going to have to be left out. But I want to see, on a more consistent basis, night where it's Zion, Ingram, and CJ, the three core guys, where they're all clicking on all cylinders on a regular basis. I think, you know, we're starting to see again over the last several months now, Zion, more of the playmaker, ball in his hands. He's counting on it. They're running the offense through him. CJ McCollum, when he came to the Pelicans, one of the first things he said to me was, he's so excited to prove to people that he's a legitimate point guard in the NBA. So how is he now going to react in playoff series where he's going to have to be getting, you know, trying to get the ball when the offense doesn't start with him?
You know, you mentioned their big three, but I believe that Willie Green has really done an incredible job managing Jonas Valanciunas' minutes this year. Mm. He's only playing just under 25 minutes a game, but he's averaging 13 points, 9.5 rebounds. I mean, you know, this guy is such an underappreciated big who can do so many things. I mean, he's got a little bit of Steven Adams in him, but with a little bit more offense. I mean, what's your take on JV and how much of a factor do you see him in the playoffs?
No, you're right. I think because the league has become so outside in, having a guy like him who obviously can shoot, he's got the ability occasionally to step out, but he becomes a matchup nightmare. You know, you keep him on the floor, Willie Green keeps him on the floor, it makes the other team have to make a decision. I love him. I think he makes a lot of sense in this offense. I think he makes a lot of sense on this team. I think absolutely he could be a problem for some of these teams that like to go more athletic or smaller up front.
You know, Jared, you kind of touched on a couple of these teams here. We talked about the Warriors a little bit, whatever. I'm curious, and the Suns, but I'm kind of curious, 7 through 10 in the West, which team do you think, or which of those seeds, would it be the Mavericks, the Suns, the Lakers, the Warriors, which of those teams do you think can overachieve, had the best chance to overachieve come playoff time?
Well, going back to what Ross said, you know, I think the Suns probably have the highest ceiling just because of their talent. And it really would be impossible for any team in the NBA to try and defend them. You would simply just have to try and outscore them, which feels like that would be an impossibility as well. You know, I'm not sold on Dallas, although, you know, they're back on the upswing again. But, you know, let's watch. You know, I haven't studied Dallas' schedule here, but especially with Luka's now hamstring injury, there's a really good chance here, like they have ebbed and flowed all year, that they're going to go and lose, you know, three straight after winning four straight. That's a scenario. I'm still not giving up on Golden State. I know many people and my colleague Charles Barkley have said, jump off the Titanic on the Warriors. But, you know, when it comes down to it, who are you going to trust in a playoff series? Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, maybe not Chris Paul because of some of his track record in playoff series, but Draymond Green, those guys, and some of these young guys. Like Jonathan Kuminga is becoming – he's on the verge of becoming something very special out there. And I'm so glad Steve Kerr finally trusts him enough to give him big minutes. So I would say I don't believe in Phoenix because I don't trust that they're going to be healthy. All these hypotheticals of if and when, I don't believe it. I just don't believe in the Lakers. That supporting cast, I think currently, you know, at times some of these guys have overachieved, and sometimes they've been exactly who we thought they were coming into the year. They're not a team that's capable of shooting. And if you can't shoot, you know, I apologize to you, Bruce, on this one, because I know you're going to hate this. It used to be defense wins championships. Offense wins championships these days in the NBA. And I just don't know that outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis, who they're going to count on in the playoffs to score. So I'd say highest upside, Suns. The team I would count on the most is Golden State.
You know, you mentioned the Lakers. I mean, they're just abysmal on the road. They're 12-19. And they've got 9 of their final 15 on the road. Is there a world in which you could see them not even making the play-in with that sort of a schedule challenge?
No, and that's where I think there's a bit of an insurance policy here for all four or five of these teams at the bottom of the West, is that Houston has plummeted, and now the injury of Şengün. Utah's not recovering from where they were. So there's a bit of a cushion. There's a basement. You know how low you're going to go. And as much as veteran teams like the Warriors and Lakers don't want to have to win to get in, you almost say to yourselves, like, you feel better about those teams than you would about a young team that you have no idea how they're going to react to that type of scenario. But yeah, I mean, 10th place, we know who the 10 teams are going to the postseason in the Western Conference. It's a matter of what order they're going to finish.
Now, shifting out east here, Jared, the first team I think we definitely need to talk about is the Milwaukee Bucks. As of taping here tonight, they are losing a bad one at home against the Philadelphia 76ers. When I first met you in person, you were covering the Bucks-Suns game. That was also an abysmal stretch for them, trying to kind of get their feelers with Doc Rivers taking over as the new head coach there. And they've shown signs, right? I mean, they got Patrick Beverley. He's kind of provided them a spark. Their defense improved right out of the gates after the All-Star break. And then they had to head back out west and had some struggles. So my question to you is this. Are the Milwaukee Bucks going to be a threat to the Celtics in the playoffs? They seem to be the only top-tier team in the East that potentially has a chance to do that. But it's just been very inconsistent this year. So I'm curious what you have to think.
I think they have enough talent to be, but I don't think they will be. And going back to kind of the theme of what I've been saying here, the defense to me is not as much of a concern as the offense. And I feel like sometimes this is where numbers may lie. You look at some of the data and some of the metrics. Milwaukee's an exceptional offensive team. I thought they would be elite when they had Lillard and Giannis. And to me, it's a bit mystifying that first Adrian Griffin and now Doc Rivers has not been able to get Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo on the same page to become a deadly pick and roll combination that is impossible to defend. It seems like neither player wants anything to do with playing that two-man game on a regular basis. It's like they have to be coerced into doing it. They don't want to force it, which seems ridiculous to me. I think this team is going to need to take a hard look in the mirror in the offseason. They're in salary cap hell, and they've got draft problems. I don't know how around the edges they're going to be able to fix this, but they're going to have to try, because as currently constituted, I think they're a team that, again, could be looking at another stunning upset in the playoffs like we had last year.
All right, Jared. Well, we're going to take our halftime break here. Then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about another team in the Eastern Conference that Milwaukee's chasing. So stand by. And welcome back. So my Boston Celtics, they've been in cruise control all season. They've had no real must-win games. Can this team all of a sudden dial up their collective intensity level to a playoff-ready focus? Is that something that they can just flip the switch and say, you know, or is that going to be a problem for them?
No, I think this team has all the motivation it needs, Bruce. I think they've been hearing all the chirping of their guys who come up small in big-time spots. Jason Tatum even acknowledged recently that people are holding it against him this season because of what he did 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. And I think the way that they are not just beating teams, but beating down teams on a nightly basis, first team in NBA history to win three games in the same year by 50 or more, I think there is that lasered in focus that this team needs. And I think Joe Mazzulla is just young enough to continue to have this mentality of, hey, we can't go on cruise control. We haven't won anything yet. We haven't accomplished anything yet. First team to 50 wins doesn't mean anything. Locking up a spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs doesn't mean anything. They have to win an NBA championship this year, and I think collectively they're all feeling it.
Now, we know that Boston mostly lives, and occasionally dies with the three. Hmm. But here's the thing that concerns me as someone who watches that team. Because they shoot so many threes, they don't really get fouled very much. They never get any of the opposing stars in foul trouble. Now, in the playoffs, when you know those matchups are much more important, could this be an Achilles heel if they go up, let's say, against teams that don't have to really use fouls and come out of the game when the coach doesn't want them out of the game?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I would almost take the opposite angle and say, the Celtics can't get into that style because their bench is so shallow, right? Like I get that they added Xavier Tillman, which is a good frontline guy. I just don't see him getting much run in a playoff series. So behind Porzingis and Horford, you've got Luke Kornet. So I just don't know how much the Celtics can afford to get into that type of game. But I'm with you. And I've spoke to people within the organization about this. They believe that they are not as three-point dependent as some of us observers may believe or what the numbers are telling us. I think they're taking the shots, the best available shot on each possession is what they believe. We'll see. Listen, we've always thought that regular season basketball versus playoff basketball is different. I'm curious. I obviously don't know the answer. I'm curious if we're starting to turn the page where you can maybe win postseason games now in this evolution of the game, the way you win regular season games. We'll find out this year.
One more from me before I allow somebody else to talk here. I heard Brian Scalabrine on NBA radio discussing managing minutes. And his take was that star players who expect to do their best in the playoffs should actually be ramping up their minutes down the stretch rather than reducing them. His theory was that stars need to play more in the postseason. They need to get mentally and physically geared up by playing more right now. What are your thoughts on that?
I could not agree more. Feels a little weird saying that with Scal because he says some off the wall stuff, as you know, Bruce. But this to me plays into the whole load management and resting players conversation because, again, the NBA has put out there very publicly, there is absolutely no data that has shown that resting players or holding players out of games when healthy, preventative measures, cautious measures, not a guy has a sore hamstring and we're not going to play. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the odds are saying if you don't play, you're more likely not to get injured than if you do play. Yeah, well, duh. We know that. But there's also no data that's proven that it has extended lifespans of players. We all look at what the Spurs did. There's a lot of stuff that is not scientific or mathematically proven that what Greg Popovich did with Tim Duncan is what preserved his career. We don't know that. We also don't know if he would have played and led the league in minutes if he still would have been able to play that many years. We don't know any of that. And I agree. I think what's interesting is some of these injuries we see in the playoffs, soft tissue injuries, hamstrings, things like that, are because guys are not only playing more minutes, but they're playing harder than they had been for the previous 6 months. And it goes all the way back to me. And listen, I'm not trying to be any sort of physicist here or athletic trainer or physical therapist, but the bottom line is we've totally changed the NBA calendar And we expect so much more of players on their own to come into shape and all that stuff. And I think for the most part, we're seeing the physiques of players are way better than they have been in the history of the NBA. And guys are more athletic than ever. But 3 days after training camp starts, they're playing games. And because guys who are stars don't have to play in the preseason, they're just not practicing now. And then in the regular season comes along, there's no practice. And you get to sit out once a week, or you don't have to play as hard, or, you know, we're blowing out a team, or we're getting blown out. Since we're playing tomorrow night or in 2 nights, we're going to rest you. And then all of a sudden, again, that threshold we talk about that teams have to walk through once the playoffs start, people aren't ready for it, whether it's physically or maybe more importantly, mentally, people are not ready for it. So I think we see more injuries, I have no data to back this up, but it feels like we get more of these injuries that shouldn't happen. We get guys who are exhausted. Why are you exhausted? Not for the length of the season, but because, like Scal is saying, you're not prepared for this type of style of play and for this, the length of that play. Yeah, I absolutely agree with it. I think the more we've given these players in resources and certainly money and compensation in other areas, we've expected less of them for when the stage is at its biggest and brightest. And it's really unfortunate. I think at some point, the league is going to have to look at itself in the mirror and fix that.
Well, speaking of minutes and teams and players playing a lot of minutes, I'm going to ask you about the Knicks here and their coach who has a reputation for fairly or unfairly giving guys, putting guys on there for long minutes or whatever. This season happened to be by necessity. Right. I'm curious, as they get healthier, as they start to get healthier, I asked you about the Kings and their ceiling. What do you think are the Knicks and their ceiling? Obviously, it's a challenge for anybody to overtake the Celtics and get out of the East. But where do you think is their ceiling as far as postseason goes? Assuming they get healthier. We don't know about Randall. I'd be surprised if Mitchell Robinson got back this season. But all that being said,
I'll tell you, I think Mitchell Robinson comes back. Prediction, not any inside knowledge. I think Mitchell Robinson comes back before Julius Randle, and I do think we see Mitchell Robinson this season.
That'd be fine with me.
How about this? I just looked this up. You know, the Knicks don't have anybody in the top 14 in the league in minutes per game played. Julius Randle is 15th in the league in minutes per game, and Jalen Brunson is 20th, and then they don't have anybody else in the top 25. So maybe it gets distorted about Tom Thibodeau a little bit, although I covered the Knicks – and Philadelphia the other night on TNT. And afterwards, I interviewed Josh Hart, and his streak of 9 consecutive games playing over 40 minutes got snapped, and he was all excited. Do you remember how many minutes he played, Michael, in that game?
Was it 38, 39?
39, yeah. So yeah, he didn't get to 40. He missed it by a minute. He was all excited. He stayed under the number of 40.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny, and because – since I guess it was Randall and Mitchell Robinson went down, I think it was like January 28th or 29th was their first game they missed, whatever. There was one player, and you brought him up, that had played average 40 minutes a game, and it was Hart. And then you had a bunch of other guys, a couple other guys like DiVincenzo had a bunch of minutes, and then Hartenstein had a bunch of minutes when he was on. Just it was all necessity, obviously, but – you know, if they get some of these guys back, OG, you know, looks like he made an impact right away the other night with the Sixers. I'm just curious, you know, how far do you think they can get if, let's say, they get everybody back in time for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, just you look at the Eastern Conference standings. Let's put Boston in a class by itself. I think the Knicks are more dangerous than Cleveland. I think they're certainly more dangerous than Milwaukee. I think they're absolutely more dangerous than Orlando, Philadelphia. I don't have any high hopes for them. And then those other teams that are in the play-in 7 through 10, the Knicks might sweep those teams. So yeah, like again, we go back to it. Like I talked about last year with Sacramento, a lot of it happens to be circumstantial, but you have to take advantage of those circumstances. So I think the Knicks are primed right now. Like if you were to ask me, If I had gun to my head, had to pick a second team to face Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals, I would pick New York. I wouldn't feel great about it. I would not feel good about it. But I think that speaks to, like, and I'm going to go on a quick tangent here, if you don't mind. people for during the Warriors dynasty, Golden Dynasty era, continuously, and I did these podcasts, I did these radio interviews, and people were constantly saying how boring it is, it's predictable, this is not good, we need more parity, we need more fan bases engaged. First of all, TV ratings higher than they are now. Second of all, don't people appreciate greatness? Like, don't all these old heads just want to reflect back to the Michael Jordan days and the Magic and Bird days when there was only like three teams that ever made the NBA finals, right? Like talking about Wilt against Russell, like that's all there was in the NBA back in those days. That people love greatness. And now we've gotten what people wanted, and be careful what you wish for, because not only do we have parity, but listen, the talent level, the athleticism, the basketball, I think is great. But we don't have teams that are great. Boston, I think, is the closest thing to that. Denver's got a chance to be that this year. Obviously, they won a championship. But like these other teams in the Eastern Conference that are all jammed together, they're not jammed together because they're really good teams. It's because they're mediocre teams. Not one of these teams do you look at and say in the Eastern Conference, man, for the next 5 to 7 years, I can't wait to watch those teams. It's just not there. Sorry, I had to get up. This is like therapy for me, guys. You record these things late at night. You know, you got to expect me to go off on tangents. This is when I come alive.
That's why we're here, Jared. We're all about tangents. Exactly.
Next time we'll start at 11, really see how you go.
Yeah. There might be some, if it's that time, there might be some bourbon involved. So we'll see.
You mentioned Orlando a second ago. I'm just curious, and I started thinking about it, and I'm down here in Orlando, so I watch them on a regular basis. Has there been a team that's been a bigger surprise this season than the Magic, where they are their fifth seed right now in the East? Is there a team that has been a bigger surprise in this league?
In the whole league?
Yeah. From where they've been?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma City and Minnesota, a lot of people had surprises, although I will say I had them as the fourth seed in the Western Conference in my preseason rankings, and people thought I was nuts, but enough about me. No, I think Oklahoma City, like, I think people thought, listen, I think by default people had Orlando in the mix for the playoffs this year just because the bottom of the Eastern Conference is so putrid. I know people, I think most people felt like Oklahoma City would be better. I don't think there was a single person, even in Oklahoma City, who had them being a top four seed, let alone competing for the number one seed in the East, in the Western Conference.
And speaking of that Western Conference and Oklahoma City at the top of the standings there, seems like obviously with Karl-Anthony Towns going down with the Minnesota Timberwolves, that Oklahoma City is the clear cut number two out west between those two teams that were kind of going back and forth. But just kind of focusing in on Minnesota, Jared. Yeah. I mean, do you think they still have a chance with that out cat in that lineup? Or do you think this has really just been the bearer of bad news for, you know, all the hope they've had this season?
Yeah, again, we talk about playoffs versus regular season basketball. And I think going back to the theme of what I've been saying all along, and I know this has been a concern of people with inside the organization, as great as they have been defensively from start to finish, they have been the best defensive team in the NBA. They have had trouble scoring, even with a guy like Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns on the court. They've had trouble, particularly in clutch moments, of getting good looks at the basket. I just don't know how in the playoffs, without Cat, they're going to be better, right? They're certainly not. So I just think it's a huge void, and I think Minnesota is in a world of trouble. And, you know, good on them for getting to where they've got to, and injuries happen, unfortunately. And if they can surprise some people, they can surprise, but I just don't see it happening.
Now, with Joel Embiid's injury, and who knows when he's going to return, probably when he got hurt, he looked like a real solid shot to return as MVP. Mm-hmm. With him being injured, being out, talk to us where you think the MVP race is at this stage of the season.
I think Embiid, you're right. I think he was starting to run away with it at the time that he got injured. But even if he were to come back, obviously he's not eligible now because he will not be able to play 65 games. And I applaud Adam Silver and the NBA for that, because God forbid you have to show up for 65 of 82 games to do your job, to be eligible for an award that determines legacy and history. With that said, I think the race is closed. Like I said, I think that there are seven, maybe eight legitimate guys who are in the mix for the top five lines on our MVP ballots. With a month to go, give me the opportunity to change my mind if something crazy happens in the next month. I just don't see how Nikola Jokic does not win the MVP for the third time in the last 4 years.
That's a tough one to go against there. Now, we've had some therapy here tonight, Jared. I believe the last time we had you on, we also had some therapy. And throughout that, you also kind of reflected on the bubble.
You guys take insurance?
No. not yet. We're working on it.
Good.
But you had shared with us a wonderful story from the bubble, having interviewed Jamal Murray post-game. Uh-huh. He got super emotional, and that was a really cool moment for you to go ahead and share with us on the 48 Minutes podcast. So I've got to ask the same question this year in terms of this season. Who's been your favorite interview, whether it be a coach or player, and why?
Wow. Now you're making me think. I got to go back and like look at my schedule. Jeez. who have I interviewed? I've had some interesting ones. I mean, that one that I did a couple of nights ago with Josh Hart was pretty cool because of how emotional he was in a positive way. I don't know who's been my favorite person to interview so far this year. Man, ask me another question. I'll come back to it.
Bruce, you're on mute.
Sorry about that. Can I give you a nominee, please?
Yeah.
I know, you know, I love watching those interviews because, you know, whether it's yourself or my good pal Cassidy from ESPN, those things are so hard. But I think the best in-game coach interview subject is Michael Malone of the Denver Nuggets. Oh, yeah. Because he actually shares real insights in real time that most of these guys just kind of give you the pablum, whereas Michael Malone actually answers the questions with depth. I mean, you've interviewed Michael. What are your thoughts on dealing with him?
Yeah, I haven't had any Nuggets games this year, but I've interviewed him a ton over the years, and I completely agree with you. I don't know if he's a psycho or if he's just a genius, but he has this innate ability at the end of the first quarter, at the end of the third quarter, when we do these interviews, for him to look at a box score for 5 seconds and digest every number possible. It's like he's got this photographic memory. And then it's not just the ability to recall, but to digest and dissect these numbers into layman's terms of why his team is having success or why they're having issues. And like you said, Bruce, turn it into, here's where our issue is, here's where we need to get better.
Okay, so, you know, we're TV people, so, you know, I love talking TV and all that. But I want you to talk one more time about your new show on the NBA app, Crunch Time. We did it 40 minutes ago. I'd like to remind people when it's on, how to watch it, what they're getting. Give it one more plug, Jared.
I appreciate you, Bruce. It's the NBA's only whip-around show. I think it's the best and easiest, most convenient way to watch the NBA. It is completely free, and if you watch with us, it's completely commercial-free as well. We do it a couple of times a week. It's exclusively on the NBA app. Occasionally, we'll simulcast on NBA TV, but we're bringing you the biggest moments of the night as they happen live from every game happening in a busy NBA schedule. And we're going to talk to the bettors. We're going to have the information about the gambling lines. We're going to show you the craziest plays of the night. We're going to show you milestone moments. We're going to show you statistical achievements. And we're going to show you why a team is winning or losing and how that game transpired. You're going to see it live. And you don't have to just watch one game. While you can watch all of the games. NBA Crunch Time. It's on the NBA app. It's the NBA's only whip-around show. I promise you, after you watch it, you're going to feel this dose of adrenaline in your body, and you're not going to want to watch basketball any other way ever again.
Looking forward to that. And is there a chance I might even get to see my guy, Scoot Henderson, on there? Because I haven't given up on him. I don't know if you have, Jared, but I'm still a big Scoot Henderson fan.
We had some Scoot last night. They were okay later on in the night, but we did the show on Wednesday night, and they were playing the Hawks, and And while we were also watching the Mavs and Warriors play, we did show a bunch of Blazers Hawks stuff. So listen, we don't just show, and listen, it's a great point that you bring up here. I don't know if this is where you're going, but we don't just listen. We love the superstars. We love to showcase the superstars. We love to showcase the big name teams. But if your team is in action, like last night, no offense here on this one, but we showed as much of Charlotte and Memphis as we did of Golden State and Dallas last night, right? Because there are people who are interested in that, and we want to show you everything that's happening that night in the NBA.
Yeah, G.G. Jackson was putting on the show, so I'm glad you guys got to that there. So we're looking forward to checking that out. Crunch time on the NBA app with Jared Greenberg. Jared, thanks for joining us here tonight. Always a pleasure to have you on the 48 Minutes podcast. And
thank you.
With that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.